You are listening to episode number 124 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast.
And I'm butt naked.
Welcome to episode number 124 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. As always and forever will be, I am your host Iggy, a.k.a. Ben, although it should be the other way around. Joining me tonight, the man who just feels nothing but utter disappointment from another genre this year, Mr. Brian Powers. Brian, welcome to the show.
I had no expectations of you and you still disappointed me. You disgust me.
Also, joining me, the master of the PC, Mr. Taser. Taser, welcome to the show.
I fix my own PCs, and I dance around in my underwear. I'm suing the Naked Cowboy for stealing my idea.
And last but not least, the man who wants to run away and join the circus, Mr. Arnold Alfred. Arnold, welcome to the show.
You.
Ladies and gentlemen, as always, in case you're new, although I highly doubt it, but in case you are, we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a weekly Marvel podcast dedicated to all things Marvel, whether that's comics, movies, video games, TV shows, and much, much more. That being said, we are fully well right into Marvel now. We've already had some titles come out, some mess, some good, some fun, some entertaining. But still, we got a long way to go before all the titles are eventually out until about, I believe, March of next year. But one anniversary issue we are approaching is The Amazing Spider-Man number 700, where apparently something is going to happen to our beloved Peter Parker. Now, if you look two episodes prior where me and Brian at least discussed who could be the Superior Spider-Man, and there's speculation out there that they confirmed, but I believe, Brian, it's Comic Vine that has speculated that a certain clone might return, right?
Yes, it was what you call an op-ed piece done by Corey Schroeder of Comic Vine.
Give credit where credit is due.
Absolutely. And who postulates that perhaps the man filling out the Superior Spider-Man costume is none other than Ben Reilly, the clone of Peter Parker from the much-loved clone saga of the 90s. Now, theoretically, how this would work would be, one way would be killing off Peter Parker, and yet another way would be almost Peter Parker stepping aside and mentoring Ben Reilly. We've seen certain facets of his character bleed through, such as Kane taking up the old Scarlet Spider mantle, but we have not seen a return of the actual original clone since the Clone Saga. So this could be a big step in what direction, I'm not sure, but a step ahead for the Spider-Man legacy, I guess you could say.
All right. Well, I want to go to the man who will fight to me to the death about the about Ben Reilly, Mr. Arnold Alfred. Now, I know you're being very careful around the spoilers to this. Obviously, this is a spoiler. But what are your thoughts on the potential return of the Scarlet Spider, a.k.a. Ben Reilly, a.k.a. the bane of my existence?
I don't deny that it's a possibility, but at the same time, it seems something that's so easy. You know, people always jump to the minute somebody says, oh, it won't be Peter Parker. Ever since the Clone Saga, anytime people bring up Peter Parker not being Spider-Man, the next logical jump is, oh, then it must be Ben Reilly, you know? It could be cool. I, however, am digging Kane as Scarlet Spider, so I could also see why it would give a good explanation as to why we would get the name Superior Spider-Man, I guess. I highly doubt he's going to run around calling himself that. I hope not.
Well, it's like Peter goes around calling himself the... Well, he does, actually.
Never mind.
You're so, right. Never mind. He does.
And I guess it's still as cheesy, you know, but either way, I guess running around calling yourself amazing or superior or anything else like that just makes you sound like a tool anyway. It just seems so easy. So while it would make sense, I'm also kind of hoping that that's not the case. Again, nothing, not that I don't have any love for Ben Reilly or anything like that, but it just, it seems for the big deal that they're making out of it to just pull Ben Reilly, there's really nothing there. You know, most people wouldn't be like, oh, bullshit. It's what they did in the fucking 90s. Instead, they're just not telling you that Peter Parker is a clone and this guy is the real deal. You know, so it's rehashing old stuff, and I really truly hope that that's not the case. And I don't think Dan Slott would be making such a big deal out of it and telling people not to post spoilers and everybody being all hush hush about it as they can be if it was something as simple as Ben Reilly. But the op-ed piece was great, and it brought up some good points and some great reasoning as to why it could be Ben Reilly, and a lot of it makes sense. I mean, you know, seeing the people that have shown up, like the Jackal, and, you know, once you have the Jackal, you're always going to have a clone of some nature running around. They had Ben Reilly running around for a while, and, you know, Kane in the mix and that kind of stuff. So it's completely plausible with the things that they've brought in. As the article stated, it'd definitely be a better way than to make Peter single and on his own again, as instead of the way One More Day did it. So we'll wait and see. Like I said, I'm avoiding spoilers, so I'm barely even reading news articles. I only read this because we had to talk about it on the show, because I'm trying to stay away from it as much as possible.
Yeah, it's a good thing they didn't they didn't say who they think it's probably going to be, but you know.
Because I've heard all the rumors, I've heard about the tweets flying out and the accidental comments and all that kind of stuff, and I've been flying by all of it, you know, and the Spider-Man thread on the boards, I just keep scrolling and not looking. I think I skipped like a whole day's worth of posts just because you guys were talking back and forth about who it might be.
Yeah. Well, Taser, the man who posted a GIF about me crying, because that's the first thing I did.
That was a good GIF.
Manly tears.
When I saw that, I'm like, really? Again? No. Anyways, Taser, you were around when this was when this first happened, when Ben Reilly assumed the mantle either of Scarlet Spider or became Spider-Man himself. What do you think of his potential return?
For the record, when Ben Reilly showed up, that's about the time when I went, fuck Marvel, and, you know, kind of bailed on the whole company. But last I saw Ben Reilly liquefied, you know, he pulled a Deadpool. Literally, Deadpool. So, unless we get dead Ben Reilly from, you know, Earth 615 or I don't know, wherever one of the female Captain Britons are from, then I don't see how it could be Ben Reilly. What I do think, though, I think we're ignoring, you know, some of the other clones that exist within the Marvel Universe. Like, maybe it's Klor, you know, the clone of Thor. Ragnarok, I think we were calling him. Could be him. You know, why not? Or maybe it might be that clone of Gwen Stacy that was running around for a while. You know, maybe she didn't die, because I think...
So that means she has no boobs, then.
She might have had a double mastectomy.
Or you could wrap them. Look at the amount of girls running around as guys in comic book stuff.
True. You know, tape them down.
It covers.
Exactly. You know, she could be pulling a Ranma one half type of dealie. You know? I think we need to start looking at the amount. Maybe it's an LND. I think it's an LND of Peter Parker that he set up specifically in case something happens to, like, let's say Aunt May. You know, like maybe she discovers what an orgasm is, falls into a coma, and he has to go find something. You know, like a cure, you know, Jameson's father who married her, maybe he died in the middle of it too. And Parker searches the planet looking for the cure to Aunt May's orgasm, and there's an LMD of him running around as the new Spider-Man while he gets that done. And it's possible too, because we're talking, looking at Peter Parker, he's got Horizon Labs backing him, and while he goes through the, you know, the jungles of denial and despair and the anguish, you know, trying to find something to help bring his aunt out of her medically induced pleasure coma. I think,
LMDs.
I think that could happen. LMDs.
And as crazy as that sounds, still a better story than One More Day.
I think anything's a better story than One More Day.
Yeah, that could be true.
Except Kingpin getting his ass beat.
The new Spider-Man is Gabriel Osborn.
Oh, will you? No, please. God damn it.
Oh. Gabriel Osborn.
Gwen Stacy is not a whore. All right. All right, Brian. I think you're a fan of him, of the Scarlet Spider. What do you think about his potential return?
I am not a fan of the Scarlet Spider, but let me put it this way. I was not reading comics during the Clone Saga. I've never read it, so I don't possess any of the enmity you all hold, or some of you hold. Hint, hint.
That's because you're 12 years old. Shut up, your boy.
I am 19 years old, sir. Thank you very much.
Mine is 7 years.
Anyway, Ben Reilly, you know, it doesn't really faze me because, like I said, I'm not the biggest Spider-Man fan, so him taking over the suit's no big problem. It is interesting to see different theories popping up outside of what happened, especially with that whole spoiler leak that happened a few weeks ago. I'm not going to mention anything out of respect to Arnold and the fans, but yeah. So whether or not Ben Reilly takes up the mantle, I really don't care. I'll probably end up checking it out anyway just to see where the whole story is landed at, but for right now I'm just kind of keeping my distance just for the fact that I really don't care, I guess. Although I will say my own personal vote goes towards the wayward love child of Aunt May and Otto Octavius. That is my vote for who takes up Spider-Man.
It'll be Baby May. Mephisto's
God.
That would be an awesome sex video. That's all I gotta say. That would be an awesome sex video. Aunt May gets the triple stuff.
Genital porn!
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so that's where I land with this whole Spider-Man fiasco.
All right, well, okay. I promise I'm not gonna turn this into a fucking Ben Reilly... You know, Ben Reilly must die.
Oh, God, we're heading there. We're heading there.
No, I'm not going to. I promise. I'm just crying deep inside.
To all our listeners, I think we should all clamor in as much as possible and demand that Superior Spider-Man be Book of the Week when it comes out.
It doesn't matter to me anyway.
If for no other reason, it's to piss off them.
Yeah. I support that. I second that.
Woo-hoo! Motion cat. Motion carry.
It doesn't matter to me. One, it doesn't matter to me anymore because I refuse to read a Spider-Man centric story written by Dan Slott. So I won't be picking up this Superior Spider-Man number one. But it's interesting because, like Taser said, the last time we actually saw Ben Reilly, he was pretty much gone. Yep. Unless there's another clone of him out there, which is entirely possible. Although Marvel did do a freaking, George Lucas treatment of the Clone Saga into a 5-issue miniseries in which it seems that Ben might have lived. So, unless they're going to do that, which is entirely possible, basically pseudo-retconning the original Clone Saga, which that's fine with me, I don't care, and make it so where Ben Reilly actually lived... And then he becomes the next Spider-Man and is making out with Mary Jane. To me, for one, they already did this story several times over the years, but also just recently with Ultimate Spider-Man. You know, I don't know if they're going to kill Peter Parker, but in the sense of replacing one Spider-Man who's not Peter Parker.
You think we might get a female Peter Parker?
I wouldn't.
Nice.
No. I'm saying like we've already replaced a Spider-Man in one universe for another character not named Peter Parker, and that they're going to do that again in the regular universe, whether they kill him or say he's going on sabbatical or witness protection or into the future, I don't know. But that to me is what the most is disturbing, whether if it's Kane, Ben Reilly, Clor, Aunt May, Dr. Otto Octavius, his brain inside Peter Parker, I don't know. But that to me is what bothers me the most, it's like, isn't that too soon to recycle that idea that's been done over there it's been executing in Ultimate Spider-Man way better than I expect Slott to do it.
Slott.
I guess happy for the Ben Reilly fans because good Lord knows I know you're fucking out there. But
Yup!
I'm not gonna have anything to do with it. So if it's him, great. You're gonna have your cake and eat it too. He's gonna be Spider-Man. The Spider-Man that I know is pretty much, I don't know, he's not gonna be off the table for good, because when the next movie's gonna come out, that boy, whoever is in that costume, is gonna be out, and Peter Parker's gonna be back in. And who knows?
Do not want!
Do not want. And I will not want. I will not have.
You know what I think?
What?
I think it's going to be baby that got kidnapped by Osborn that we never found. Somehow or other, the time-space continuum is going to rupture, and that kid is going to come out, be changed into a man somehow, and be about age approximate enough to be able to take over the mantle of Spider-Man.
I bet you it's Hawkeye.
I think it's Doc Connor's kid, Billy, from the dead.
Oh, that's off, too.
Zombie Spider-Man.
It explained the retractable claw.
No, you know what? You know who? I got it. It's Uncle Ben. Time lost. Young Uncle Ben.
Who's dating Gwen Stacy?
There you go. She's a dirty girl.
Oh, my God.
She's a dirty girl.
Tell us what your crazy theory is on who the superior Spider-Man will be. You have any more to add before we move on to the next group of discussion, I guess?
Nope. Yes, we should name one episode of our show at some point, She's a Dirty Girl. That's all I gotta say.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next topic, which is obviously last month we saw the release of Uncanny Avengers, the quote-unquote flagship, whatever, the new team book from Marvel featuring a team of mutants and X-Men, which has never been done before.
Unless you count Wolverine, in which case it was done before.
Exactly. Hence,
the first time, never again.
So, starting with issue 6, which is going to be a special issue drawn by Olivier Coipel, the always gorgeous drawing Olivier Coipel, will add team members such as Sunfire.
Wrong company. That is the distinguished competition you were thinking of.
Starfire joined the team. I would Sunfire, Wonder Man, and the Wasp will also be joining Scarlet Witch, Captain America, Wolverine, Thor, and Havoc and Rogue. So I like it. I always love Sunfire ever since the first comic, non-Spider-Man comic I ever read was a CD where I got Giant Size X-Men number 1, and if you clicked on a TV screen on the comic, it would take you to clips of the 90s show. So that was my introduction to Sunfire. So I've always loved his look, and I've always been a fan of fire-based powers, and he's Japanese, so that makes him automatically cool.
You enjoy flamers. Good to know.
Anyways, so yeah, cool to see Sunfire finally on a team, you know. I wish he was part of the X-Men again. I can't remember exactly why something to do with Apocalypse. Nobody remembers. Wonder Man, you know, he's still kind of a dick for what he did, but apparently it's okay, so whatever, I guess. And Wasp, always good to see Wasp back on the team. I like what she brings. If handled well, she can be a very good member on any set of team. So
everybody loves a Wasp.
I have nothing to say to that.
I didn't even hear it.
Taser, what do you think of this expanded roster?
Yeah, fuck Janet Van Dyne, because it's not like she needed to be brought back to be put on this book. You know, they brought it back because, I want Janet Van Dyne back. Yeah, yawn. Fuck Wonder Man. And, you know, going back to what I was saying off show, Wonder Man, another Avengers character who causes a whole lot of shit and doesn't really get much flack about it afterward. Okay? I mean, come on. Sunfire. Okay, I've always liked Sunfire personally. You know, he was a pain in the ass, arrogant, conceited, you know, flaming mutant dickhead.
Wasn't he the son of a diplomat? He was like the son of a diplomat, I remember. He was.
I couldn't care. If he was the son of a diplomat, then he learned nothing from his father. Because it's most likely it would have been his father. He learned nothing from him. He was the exact opposite of what a diplomat should be. But I liked him.
Namor.
Namor, well, you know what? depends on which version of Namor. But Sunfire, I think, pretty much was almost entirely like one type, and that was asshole. You know?
Yep, pretty much.
Yeah, you know? But I like Namor. I mean, fuck Namor.
Sunfire.
I like Sunfire. Sunfire at least was honest, and he, you know, he manned up when he was wrong, and he got proven wrong quite often from the stuff that I read. I liked him, you know. I didn't read that story where he ended up becoming one of Apocalypse's thralls or whatever. You know, I was out at that point. But for them to bring him back and put him on a book and actually use him in something rather than just be, oh, he's the Japanese guy over there. You know, whatever.
He's our token.
Yeah, you know. I kind of look forward to that. Of course, he's going to be on the Uncanny Avengers, and that whole team concept is just really, you know, really. But be that as it may, I'll see what they do with him. You know, I can't promise I'm going to be on the book, you know, come the 12th issue, but I will see. And admittedly, I also want to see what, you know, how they get through with the
Charles Xavier's brain.
Well, yeah, there is that too. But I want to see how they handle Simon on the team, because I want to see something happen where somebody goes, hey, you know, didn't that guy do this? And then they go, yeah, so maybe we should handle it like that. Rather than, oh, hey, Simon, welcome back, buddy. Jump on the team. Because that would just really bug the fuck out of me.
All right. Brian, what do you think about the three new additions to team members to the Uncanny Avengers?
I guess I'll start with my genuine first reaction when I saw this. My first reaction was Sunfire, really. You know, because he seems like kind of out of left field. But then when you think about it, it kind of makes sense. I mean, the dude's been there since Giant Size, actually, if I'm not mistaken. He was part of the team drafted to go save, you know, all them trapped on, what do you call them? Krakoa. So it's not really a surprise. I mean, he's kind of a staple of the mutant universe. And now he's been kind of given the cold shoulder, for lack of a better pun, in recent years. But, you know, I think it's fair to say that, you know, everyone deserves a shot with the Marvel reboot, and I guess there's no better way than spotlighting a mutant that's been kind of out of the game for the past few years. And, you know, I'm fairly excited. You know, he seems interesting. I know his Age of Apocalypse version kicked major ass over in Uncanny X-Force. Hint, hint. So we'll see how that works out. Wonder Man, of course, I've been keeping up with ever since he started his little temper tantrum, which took apart Avengers Mansion and then Avengers Tower. And then he kind of apologized, but they didn't really accept him, and he disappeared again, saying he'll get control of his powers. And now, hey, he's on the Avengers again. So I guess that's progress. Like Taser, I'm not really sure how they're going to handle it or you know, how he'll be brought on, but I am very curious to see, because I do enjoy this new take on Wonder Man, this kind of bitchy, temper tantrum-y, you know, angry version of Simon, who's a little more aware of the flaws of the Avengers. So to see him actually join the team again after that very well-publicized battle he instigated will be very interesting. And Wasp is, you know, Wasp. She's a mainstay. She's been on the Avengers ever since its inception, so for her not to be on the Avengers, I guess, feels a little wrong. So to see her back again is heartening. And, hey, they went to all this trouble to, you know, promote her coming back special, so I guess they had to do something with her. And, hey, why not the Avengers? Because, you know, it's already been delayed after the first issue. Yeah. So my overall feelings are generally positive. I would like to get past the first issue of the series before I made that call. But, you know, you take what you can get. So overall, I'm feeling fairly optimistic about this new lineup. So, yeah, bring it on. Woo.
Woohoo! Arnold, what about you, buddy?
Seeing Janet is cool. I remember we brought up before when I reviewed the Avengers issue, what her personality was like aside before she came back. You know, she's in the mix, and we all know why. You know, half of it is, I'm sure, because people wanted to see Janet back in terms of writers and people writing the books. And the other side of that is, we have a brand new Avengers cartoon coming out, and she's going to be in it. So let's put that in there so our books match our TV series and our movies instead of just being their own books. So cool on that. I'm intrigued to see where they go with Janet and what relationships they're going to build around her. Wonder Man, maybe I can deal with him more when he stops being a pissy, whiny little pain in the ass. You know, I've already got somebody for that. His name is Scott Summers. you know. So that, I'm just indifferent. And to be completely honest, in terms of Sunfire, I completely forgot he even existed. It's not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad because he's a bad character or anything. I just totally fucking forgot about Sunfire. It's been so long since I've even heard his name mentioned in anything or even in general conversation with other comic book readers that I completely
forgot. Sun who? Sun what?
Yeah, exactly, you know? So I guess I'm kind of indifferent about that one, not to mention that, you know, I know next to nothing about him, so maybe this will be a chance for that now. I'm not sure how I feel about his costume, although I know I believe that's pretty much his classic costume or what he's been wearing, that the whole face mask thing looks kind of fugly and weird. but yeah, I'm just kind of indifferent about the new members. I was already kind of on board with the comic to begin with, so this hasn't, you know, deterred me from that, nor is it making me even more excited for it than I already was. So yeah, that we've got one character I'm intrigued by because I liked how she was on the TV, on the cartoon that she was in, and just see what they do with her. And I liked her in the comic book when I read a bit about her. Another guy I could care less about because he's too whiny and bitchy, and one I'm just kind of indifferent towards because I haven't seen them around me for forever.
All right. Well, it's certainly a nice, you know, mix of characters, and it plays to Reminder's strengths, which is basically taking characters really nobody messes with for a while, and which can allow him to do whatever he wants to them, which usually includes tormented, heart-wrenching stuff. So,
let's see. That means he's going to play with the Simon Williams Wanda Maximoff relationship again.
Never
said. Yeah, because nobody's ever played with that before.
Did I say that? I was more speaking towards Sunfire and that kind of. And
maybe it'll be a love triangle between Simon, Wanda, and Janet.
Or maybe it'll be Sunfire and Rogue. Yeah, getting some of that soy sauce. Ha ha.
Or maybe it'll be Cap and Havoc.
Blonde
I
guy,
wish I could quit you.
They won't do that to the All-American. It's anti-American to be gay.
No,
hey, this is the new century of hell.
It'll be Thor.
You can be American
Thor
and fabulous.
Captain America, it'll be a blonde witch. There you go, blonde
witch.
All right, well, last...
And Thor just bones all of them, because he's a god. And he rapes and pillages. Hoorah.
Well, last but not
Which
least,
one, Thor?
The one I'm yeah. most excited about. We finally got an announce date.
This March,
we'll see the final release of the Age of Ultron.
Woo!
I'm doing, you can't see this right now, but I am doing so hard to contain my just pure excitement and joy for the
He's actually jacking off right now.
Not
first
doing that. My just,
he's doing that while he's doing the Dougie. That's right. He's
I don't even know how to do that.
Doing a Dougie.
I don't even know how to do that. Anyways, so this March we'll see the release of Bendis and Brian Hitch, part Brian Hitch, anticipated story in which Ultron finally achieves what he was programmed to do, or changes programming to do, which is rule everything. And we saw the beginnings of this storyline with the when they relaunched Avengers in 2010 with the Kang storyline, and we saw a future where Ultron literally controlled everything and was in a civil war with Kang. Then I believe that following year for Avengers Point One issue, we saw that Ultron had officially returned from space after fighting in space with something I don't remember. Doesn't matter. He's back. He's meaner than ever, and he wants to kill every single sentient being, not sentient, but every organism on the planet. I'm super excited. I love Ultron. I think he's a great villain. I love villains like him. I am sadly disappointed that Brian Hitch is only drawing 5 of the 10 issues versus...
No!
And I believe it's Brandon Peterson, and who else Brian is going to be? Carlos Pacheco, right?
Yeah,
Brandon Peterson, who are not bad artists, but I would have loved to have seen this whole story done by Brian Hitch. You know, and especially if it was going to be Brian Hitch from, say... The Authority, you know, that art of Brian Hitch. Or even You know, or even Brian Hitch from the Ultimates. I would take that. And I hope that's what we get in those first five. That being said, my excitement level is through the roof. I love Ultron. I love it. Although in the preview pages, you can see a Spider-Man there, and it kind of looks like Peter Parker.
It is. It is. According to good Mr. Slott, who I emailed about this afternoon, it takes place before Spider-Man 700.
Woohoo! That's continuity for the win.
Continuity. Boom.
Anyways, so I don't... Doesn't matter.
Who would have thunk it?
So, okay. I'm super excited. You guys talk because I'm just going to rabble. Arnold batters up.
It looks cool. The preview looks pretty fucking awesome. We all know when Ultron is around, you know, the shit has gone beyond hitting the fan. You know, the shit has hit the universe pretty much. He's up there. He's one of the big bads, you know, right up there with Galactus and Thanos, those guys of those nature. Cause when they show up, there's really no, you know, there's really nothing you could get on them that you could convince them to stop doing what they're doing. It's like, nope. I'm here. I'm ready to fuck up everything, including
here. I'm here. Get used to me.
You know, nothing's gonna stop that. So yeah, it looks cool. You know, when Ultron's around, it's almost always gonna be a big, all-out brawl. You know, smashdown fight because he doesn't do things lightly. There's no you know subtle. There may be some subtle for the plans just starting to develop, but. Once it takes flight, it takes flight. I'm actually kind of looking forward to this. The preview pages look pretty sweet. That one big double page spread, I guess, you know. I'm assuming it's for the book because everything looks kind of blurry and shaky. It looks like some big ass seismic event of some sort is going on.
Yeah, sure. From the point one issue was basically all the Ultrons were engaging where the Avengers were. So it was kind of like they're raining
and
shit down
on
tons of them flying around. It's almost reminiscent of, you know, giant Sentinel armies floating around and going, or kind of what's going on in Ultimate X-Men now, kind of reminiscent of that, you know.
Kind of like the Iron Giant, if he didn't get bombed on the head and just kind of, you know.
Yeah, just, you know, flying about, and one Ultron is bad enough. You spread that about a whole bunch of other mini Ultrons or whatever you want to call them, and where Ultron can be anywhere and everywhere simultaneously with having all those Ultrons around, it's bad for business. It's no bueno. I wonder if they're going to bring in the whole, I'm assuming maybe that's where some of this jumped off and I'm forgetting the name of it, but I guess it happened in Mighty Avengers, maybe? The Avengers Mansion where Jocasta and everything was, like the Infinity Mansion or whatever it was that they were calling it. I wonder if any of that's going to come into play because Jocasta was essentially able to do the same thing. You know, there were just a whole bunch of Jocastas all around the mansion and she could just transfer her consciousness from one to the other. So I wonder if they're going to touch on that. I'm assuming it's going to bring Ant-Man very much to the forefront because you very rarely do Ultron, considering he was pretty much the creator, to do Ultron and not have Ant-Man be a big deal. And of course, Tony Stark would be a big deal. And I'm sure that means we're going to get some shiny new Stark armor to fight the new and improved Ultron, but it looks fucking sweet.
All right. Brian, oh, by the way, Agent Purple, you're a wet blanket. Brian, take it away.
Oh my gosh. I just like to mention that in the first look image, it looks like Ultron's gold plated now, pimped out.
It's on that cover.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Hey man, you gotta look.
Android and Justice League Unlimited, and he went away silver and came back gold.
He went to the same place Amazo went to.
Ivo's Android.
Oh my god. Okay, I guess when it comes to Ultron, I'm a little bit cynical because my first introduction to the character was back right after Civil War when he showed up in that Avengers book and he was basically a naked Janet Van Dyne with strategically placed patches of metal everywhere. That was my introduction to Ultron. I mean, obviously, since then, I've kind of grown my knowledge of him. I've read more of him. So I know he is a much larger threat than was presented back then. I know that he is of a singular vision. Like you guys have said, he's up there with the heavy hitters because there's nothing you can do to deter him from what he thinks is right. So for him to finally be reigning down the Age of Ultron, it's very, very intriguing to see how he does that. On the topic of Jocasta, I'm not really sure how she's going to play into that, but I do I do like toying with the theory that he kind of has his wires, so to speak, everywhere. You know, he sees everything, knows
he
everything.
Can jump where, he can jump his consciousness into any kind of technology.
Yeah. He's pretty much Hank Henshaw.
You can't that's the scary thing about Ultron. You can destroy his body, but you cannot. Unless Tony Stark finds a Deus Ex Machina way to get rid of him, you can't get rid of him.
Last time Tony Stark ran into Ultron, he got turned into a woman. So, yeah. You know, there is that.
Are we going to take bets for how long it's going to take for Tony Stark's armor to get infected by Ultron?
I say issue two.
2.3 seconds.
Until issue 9.
It's got to happen. It almost always happens.
It always happens, because Tony Stark is a man who relies on machinery, and Ultron is a living machine. Of course it's going to happen. I will say, though, one of the things that kind of intrigued me was the deal with Wolverine looks old in these first images. Anyone else notice that? He looks exceptionally aged in these, which kind of confused me for a second as to what the hell I was looking at, but maybe it's just the way Hitch draws him, but he just looks, he looked elderly to me, much like our good friend Taser over here. I kind of hope he picks up allies. Like, I hope he just brings up, like, almost every robotic thing. Like, I want him to just throw, like, Jocasta and Vision and Danger at people and just be like, look, bitch, look what I can do. Because that would be sweet as hell. So I guess I'm looking forward to Age of Ultron. Of course I'll pick it up, but you know, I'm not really committing to anything simply because Ultron doesn't, for as badass as he is, he doesn't really hold my interest. It's nothing against, you know, his character. It's just stories with Ultron don't tend to amuse me as much as, you know, other stories do, I guess. So I'll definitely be checking it out. Brian Hitch always gets my attention, and Bendis, you know, he's Bendis, he's quality writing. But we'll see where the story goes, and that'll pretty much decide whether or not I keep picking up the book or not.
All right. Last but not least, the man who probably is going to bring it down a notch, Mr. Chaser, Age of Ultron.
I think, you know what? The first words out of Ultron's mouth is going to be something more along the lines of, Bah, wheat, grana, wheat, ninny bong. It's going to be something like that. You know, maybe bop or ah-ah. You know, I don't know. Could be Klaatu Barata Nictu. I don't know. I think Tony Stark is probably going to, you know, be half shitless throughout this entire run because he feels his body might get taken over again. You know?
Yeah, I'd be nervous too.
Yeah, I think Ultron might have spent some time in Japan where, you know, they pull that whole body switching, gender bending thing fairly often, you know, and he's like, hey, let me, hey, where's Tony Stark? I feel like turning him into a chick again. Let's get rid of that penis.
Don't say shit like that.
What? That's what he did.
No,
he he made it so that Tony Stark could get pregnant. Hey!
He doesn't like the idea of a dickless RDJ, apparently.
No,
Iggy is against that.
Anybody
idea.
Cured dickless who's a man. Just no.
He tucked it in.
You fuck me.
You want to know what was horrible? He could have had a striptease with Tony's body and had all the other male Avengers go, hey, you know what? Not bad. But I digress. I'm not overly looking forward to this. Ultron's a punk, you know, he's an old-fashioned villain. He's a, grr, my plan is awesome and you guys will have no
old
chance. Old-fashioned,
he's on the cutting edge of technology and cybernetics. He's
grr,
the, you know, he
I
is the ghost in the machine.
Grr, you guys have no hope against my powers and ability and plans and fingernail. Grr, you can't stop me. Grr, I'm going to start running now. Grr, I'll be back, you whippersnappers. Grr. 2 weeks later. Grr, I'm back with a new plan. You know, fuck him. Seriously. Ultron, I, you know what? A sufficiently well thought, well played Peter Parker could take out fucking Ultron. You know why? Because most of the people that come across Ultron are like, hey, let's beat on the fucking big metal adamantium robot. Fucking idiots. He's covered in adamantium. the last thing you do is throw shit at him. You know? The smartest moves ever would be, hey, look, Wasp, Ant-Man, you want to handle that? You know, just go right inside. Thank you. You know? Boom, he's done. It's over with. What? You know, or better yet, hey, his mouth is open. Water balloon. Right there. Boom. Shh. Or better yet, water and acid balloon right up in there. You know, short him out. Oh, he's done. He's down. Something. Most of the fight involving Ultron is throw shit at his shell. I repeat. Most of the fight with Ultron is throw shit at his shell.
Taser, taser. We're not cavemen. We have technology.
Yeah, we am have
Let's technology. Pick it up and throw it at him.
Exactly. Hey, what's their biggest move? Thor, throw your hammer at him. Yeah, okay. I don't have a whole lot of anxiousness. You know, I'm not eagerly looking forward to this. I will read it because I want to see how long the throwing shit at his shell will last. I want to see exactly what type of solution they come up with, or if it's not some other type of something that Ultron's doing in order to let him be the problem that he is at this point in time, and how they reverse it, and that somehow causes him to run off and be whatever. I want to see how long that lasts. Also, like DJ Eaglestein over there, I want to see what they do, since it's taking so fucking long to actually give us the Ultron story that they'd hinted at since, what, 2001, 1989? How fucking long was that? I mean, seriously? What the fuck? I mean, what happened here?
Hitch was takes it just, forever to draw.
Oh, come, get the fuck out of here. No, that, I'm not, you know what, you're right. Hitch does takes a long time to do this, but
they would have said
2 years ago.
Because if they would have said, let's just do this out of the gate, we would have gotten a one issue out, 4 months of delays, issue two, 3 more months of delays, and then change artists because Hitch can't keep up.
You know what? They could have taken Hitch, taken him out of his home or studio, whatever the fuck he works, tossed his ass in the deepest, dankest pits of Marvel
Studios. Even then, he'll still take forever to do it.
No.
Because he's one of those people.
No, Sandra Bernard behind him with a branding iron, you know, ready to jab his ass with a hot poker that she's wearing around her hips.
He'll still take forever to draw it.
And you know, just, you know, y'all monkey, y'all! And this could have been the summer spectacular that either... This could have taken place of either AVX or Fear Itself. I would rather have had this.
Just switches OS to, you know, Windows Vista. It'll be fine. It'll crash in like 5 minutes.
But yeah, so when this comes out, I'll be there and I'll look at it. Mm-hmm. I'm not super anxious or anything for it. I just want to see what the fuck. I'll finally be able to see what the fuck is going to happen with Ultron this time. But I know it's going to be more, hey, let's throw shit at his shell, you know, and just like maybe, what, 5, 10, 25 issues of that, so yeah.
Well, and also, I think, Wet Blanket, by the way, so...
Agent Purple, I love you!
So...
I could take you or leave you, dude.
Age of Ultron, I'm assuming number 1 or AU1, whatever the numbering is, who cares? Age of Ultron starts this March, goes through June, 10 issues... Let the war begin. All right. Now, finally, we can get into the comic book discussion, despite that we've been talking comic books the entire time. The Marvel Now train continues, as this week's Book of the Week was All New X-Men number 1. This begins the official movement of Bendis from the Avengers franchise to the X-Men franchise to fuck up another franchise, according to some people.
Oh, that's not fair.
Well, to some people, he ruined the Avengers
franchise. We'll get into it.
He ruined it.
So, basically, the story is, you've heard it. It's the last couple pages where you've heard of it. But this issue, we get the spoilers. The two new mutants, one who is named Eva And another one who looks like Jared from Subway, even though the joke's been made a thousand times already, who had the most auspicious line when somebody said, "Do you look like a mutant?" And he says, "What does that mean?" I'm like, "How can I don't understand that either. Like, how can you tell he's a mutant just by how he's acting?" That just felt weird.
And welcome to one of the things that X-Men used to do all the time. It's like, well, what's a mutant supposed to look like? It harkens back to, well, you don't look like a gay guy. Really, what's a gay guy supposed to look like?
Yeah, it felt like I can, like, if he was like Beak, I'm like, okay, he's a mutant. But this guy just looked normal, you know?
Yeah.
So basically, Scott has broken out of prison as seen in Consequences, I believe.
Yep.
And is leading a mutant revolution. He rescued Eva, who has the ability to stop time in a certain area. And Cyclops is teamed up with, of course, Emma Frost and Magneto. Although I really find it odd that Magneto's with him. I really find it odd. Maybe it's because he doesn't have the Phoenix Force anymore, and that's why he's like, maybe he's not that bad after all. So, of course, you have the fact that at the Jean Grey School of Higher Learning, Storm, Iceman, and Kitty Pryde are... You know, some of them are appalled. Iceman's like, you know, I never thought Scott would do this. If our younger self saw this, foreshadowing, he would slap them silly. Beast looks like he is going to die or is going to have a heart attack or a stroke or something's happening to Beast. He's mutating, according to him, and that his heart can't take it. And they're trying to figure out, what do we do? If we attack Scott, we lose. If we let Scott continue what he's doing, we lose. I'm actually finding out that I'm enjoying the issue more now that I'm discussing it. Who knew? So basically, they're sort of stuck in the middle. And Beast, with no explanation whatsoever, goes back in time to the original 5 X-Men. And if you use the Marvel Augmented Reality app, if you paid for it, it shows where the original issue was from. So, like, it's actually...
13 or 14, right?
Huh?
X-Men 13 or 14.
You sound very far away, but I heard that X-Men 13 to 14. One of those two. It's been a while since I've viewed the app. So basically, Hank McCoy. Beast basically says, you know, for some reason, young Beast was able to tell that that's him, I guess. Maybe it's, I don't know. It wasn't clearly explained. That doesn't matter.
Just, it could sound the same.
Probably. That's what it is.
Except with all the teeth.
Yeah, basically says, I need Scott, I need you to come to the future to stop you from committing genocidal, come with me if you want to live, I need you to stop mutant genocide, which I thought, and I'll say, I told this to Arnold pre-show, but I felt the issue was basically lackluster, and sure, it's number one, there's a lot of exposition, but there's a way to do good exposition and entertaining to keep the reader enthralled, whether you're a new reader or an older reader, and you knew all this stuff, and there's a way to do it. And I felt that Bendis was really keeping in mind more heavily on the fact that there was a potentially, not necessarily new to comics, but new people who didn't read the X-Men before, and catching them up to speed, which is fine. I like the fact that there are new mutants popping up with new powers. You know, I have always liked that, you know. So maybe we like the show Heroes of New Abilities. But the issue, again, didn't get start cranking until I saw the original 5 and Beast wants them to come back to talk to Cyclops. Which, that to me what the series is going to be about. So, I mean, and Stuart Immonen's is nice. It looks different from the last time we saw it with Fear Itself. It looks a lot more heavy. I don't know what he did this time or if they decided to do a heavier line on him. But... it was a lot. Everything felt like it had this ominous weight on them. And maybe that's on purpose. I don't know. But it still looked fantastic. That being said, for me, All New X-Men gets a 3 out of 5. It was okay. Wasn't anything great. The stuff that I'm looking forward to is not going to happen till issue 2 and beyond. So I'll see. I don't want to give a verdict on the series yet. I'm still continuing with it, but... I want to see these reactions. Particularly, I want to see how Warren Worthington reacts to him being dead, but his body's still around as if a New Age hippie. So that's going to be fun to watch. Arnold, what did you think of All New X-Men number 1?
Like most number 1s, this was a lot of just set up and laying the groundwork for anybody that decided to stay away from... the entirety of AVX, or for people just jumping into X-Men now, you know, like you said, it's primarily set up, and I usually go into number ones not expecting a whole lot to come out of it, to be completely honest, especially for a new series. Not to mention, this is Bendis, and, you know, he is king of the slow burn. And also, this book comes out every 2 weeks, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Bi-weekly.
So it kind of makes sense, because you don't necessarily need to rush as much, because in 2 weeks you're going to have another story again. You know, if you put out all of your hardest, heavy-hitting stuff right out the gate, it's just going to fall flat, or you're going to get through stuff too soon and people won't bother. The way I kind of pictured this issue was it laid the groundwork but gave you something at the very end, like a TV show, gave you something at the very end at the last minute or two to come back and keep you watching for the next episode. You know, it's like, all right, here's all this shit going down. Holy shit, we're bringing the X-Men back from the X-Men from the past back into the future. Credit. Come back next week, you know, which it's, you know, the stopping the episode right before the final blow, or before somebody gets hit with something, or for us Walking Dead fans, like the episode where Michonne shows up for the first time, slices the heads off two zombies, you see her standing there, that's it. Want to see more, but it's nope, come back next week and find out who this girl is, you know. So I can see where they're coming from in that. It was alright. The art, I thought the art was fantastic. It's Immonen, of course, which is just always a good time. I very rarely, if ever, have seen bad Immonen art. But I'm still gonna hold on with this series, because I'm looking forward to seeing where it's going. And like you said, Ben, I'm very much looking forward to, which Bendis has given me a lot of, the character moments, as I've always said. I want to see the reactions of past and present meeting each other and how that's gonna go. And if anybody is going, you know, if anybody's perspectives are going to change, are the X-Men from the past going to look at things differently, or maybe side with people here, or will our future counterpart side with those people, you know, stuff like that. Most importantly, for the Cyclops meeting, which is kind of the main reason why Beast is bringing the whole team back to begin with. But that's kind of the stuff I'm looking forward to in all new X-Men. Obviously, it's not going to keep on through the whole series, but for a while it lasts, I'm looking forward to. So I guess I'll give a nice middle of the road. Maybe a little more than middle of the road because of the art, and I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5.
All right, well, let's go to Taser, who I believe said he had a new respect for Hank McCoy because of this issue. I want to hear why.
I look at his somewhat internal and external dialogue in this, and then I think back over the stuff that had happened with him during AVX. And, well, for a long time, I'd say out of the original five, you know, you had Cyclops as your leader, you had Jean as the heart, you know, Bobby was the lighter side, Warren was, I don't know where you'd peg Warren, but Hank was your rock. You know, Hank was, you know, your support base. You know, that's the person that you could always go to, you know, bounce stuff off of and, you know, see where you stood, whether you should go left or right. And seeing how he gets played here, you're looking at a man who's tired. I mean, yeah, he's also got something going on, you know, with his mutation, which apparently is, you know, it's killing him. And, you know, he's not sure exactly how else he's going to handle that, but he's handling it himself. Which, as we all know, when doctors try to heal themselves, they kind of fuck it up. But more so than that, we're looking at a man who's, and he says it himself, he's tired. You know, this is a guy who I think is really feeling the weight of everything that's going on, and it's pushing him down, as strong as he is, and for as long as he's been the solid character that he's been, it's breaking him. You know, I'm that's what I'm seeing here. And more so than anything else that's going on in this book, that is what I found the most interesting. And believe it or not, that's why I'm going to stay for a little bit, because I want to see how Hank deals with this. You know, I've always liked Hank over Scott. I've always liked Hank over all the other original X-Men. Wolverine's still my favorite, don't get me wrong. I've always been a Wolverine fan, not so much in the stories that they tell with them, but I've always liked Wolverine. But out of the original X-Men, Hank's been my favorite, you know? And seeing his weariness, you know, just be realized as it was here, you know, I'm loathe to use this word, but I'm feeling for him. You know, what's that term? I have feels, you know?
Empathy.
Exactly, thank you. Which is kind of odd because, as I always say, how the fuck can you have empathy for a comic book character? Dumbasses. But still in all, I'm feeling for at least that feeling. You know, that feeling of all the shit that's going on that, you know, you have no control of and you're just trying to fix it because that's the only thing you can do is just try to deal and fix. You know, fix what you can. The stuff with Scott, seriously, you know, he's finding mutants and he's going, look, you got a choice. Stay here and deal or come with me and you get to live and I train you on how to use your powers. You know, it's the Xavier offer, but more insistent. Okay. And it's not bad. You know, as a matter of fact, I like that new chick who apparently held like that, three block section of Australia.
Yeah.
Frozen for like 26 hours.
That was pretty cool.
And she didn't know it because I don't think any of us, you know, who read that realized what had happened, that she, or even could really tell that she had been there for that long without leaving. I mean, if imagine that happens to you and everything stopped. Would you stick around for 26 hours? Seriously. But anyway, I digress. Scott, you know, getting in and then, you know, making a snatch grab. Okay, yeah, cool, fine. I thought that the Jared character, who on the cover looks Caucasian, and then we open up the book and we see, oh, no, he's Nubian. Like, hello? Never mind, it doesn't really matter. But I thought the argument there was, like, pretty fucking hilarious. Hey, you were with this girl, and she fell down, and she stopped moving, and you touched her, and she started moving again. How dare you heal her? You know, one of the most fucktarded arguments I've ever heard, especially in regards to holding somebody in a police station. Like, what the bloody fuck? And, you know, and I don't want to say this, but, you know, it felt like a black moment because he was sitting there going, like, well, what the fuck did I do wrong? I see where this book's going to go. It's kind of, you know, blunt and simple. But the Hank angle is, I really believe that's what's going to keep me coming back. So, I'll give a 3 points. No, I'll give a 3.6 for the book in general. But for the Hank part, I'm going to give that a 4.2.
I think he's going to be the big focus of this book.
I hope so. Because you know,
I mean,
what?
Everybody else involved is on another team or in another book.
Well, so is he. You know, I mean, he's on, that's like, true. What, I think two different
what,
adventures.
Sword?
In terms of mutant team.
He's a fucking sword.
In terms of a mutant team, he's not really heading up or in charge in that regard. He's on other teams, secret adventures, regular adventures, stuff like that.
Yeah, but yeah, I want to see Hank, and I'm a root for Hank. You know, that's it right there. I kind of need another Marvel book because I'm really running out of shit to read, you know. But I like Hank, and I want to see him come out of this alive, you know. I want to see him come out of this alive, or at least I kind of want to be there to see. I want to see him come out of this, you know. I want to see him beat it, you know. That's my empathy right there. Fuck all of that shit. I want to see him pound it, break it, and step up and go, what's next? That's it right there. And that's me. And I'm done.
All right. Brian, last but not least, you.
Woo!
All new X-Men number one.
Yeah, like Arnold said, Bendis is the master of the slow burn. We really only get something, you know, aimed towards the story we were, you know, promoted near the end of the book when Hank's like, "Hey kids, I'm from the future." You know, beyond that, we get some more expanding of Cyclops' ranks, I suppose, or depending on where they end up. We haven't really seen where he will send the kids. I think he makes them the offer of sending them wherever they want to go, whether that be Wolverine or he can stay with them, but that remains to be seen. The whole backstory with Hank and what's going on with his mutation is intriguing. This dude seems to get gypped more than anybody when it comes to his mutations. He's mutated, like, right. What, 2-3 times now? And now he has to go through it again, and this time it might kill him? Like, you couldn't put him through enough when you made him blue-skinned? You had to go and almost kill him now, too? Well, that's nice. Anyway, the story itself was, it was building, laying the groundwork. There's no arguing that. They had some interesting moments, like Cyclops and his team, you know, going to different mutants and stuff and picking them up. And then there was the whole bit with the team in the past and Hank almost quitting and, you know, him intervening right then and being like, "Hey, come to the future and save yourselves." So what we get mostly is just kind of like, all this cool stuff is going to happen, but you got to buy the next issue to get it. And you're kind of like, well, okay, yeah, I kind of saw that coming. Because you did. You knew it was coming. It's a number one by Bendis. Of course it was going to happen. That being said, the story itself wasn't bad. You know, Bendis' writing is always up to par. The art is decent. Stuart Immonen, I do have a soft spot for him. He does tend to hold my interest a bit. Although, you know, when you draw Jared Fogle from Subway and you make him in blackface, it's kind of like, well, what'd you do that for? The story, I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5, just for now, because it was the first issue. But hopefully we'll see more of it as the time goes on. So that's it for me.
Huge expectations moving forward. All right, well,
Hold on.
You go.
One last thing, I want to ask a question.
Sure.
How did Hank go in time? Back in time?
I guess we'll find out, or it's one of those, fuck it, let's not explain it. It's going to be one of those two things.
All right, because I don't read enough X-Men.
I
couldn't answer that question myself.
Because I don't think it's important how he gets back there, but the fact that he went back there and did what he did.
No, you got to answer that.
No, Danger is right. That's kind of a big, glaring, like...
No, come on. All right, put it this way. If Aunt May goes back in time to stop Uncle Ben from going outside and, you know, encountering that burglar... So it changes the universe. Wouldn't you like to know that how the fuck did Aunt May go back in time? I'm just saying.
Beast has access to, probably a lot of technology. He probably asked Reed Richards, if anything else.
Alien technology.
I can only speak for me and that me, I don't care. The point is he went back in time and that's the point.
No.
That's for me.
You got to tell me how that happened. I'm sorry. That's me. You got.
I'll ask Bendis on Twitter, and then if he says read next issue, then you'll have your answer.
Yeah, tweet it. Tweet.
All right. So there we go. Let's move on, and let's go to Mr. Brian Powers first for individual reviews.
Ooh. Okay. Kicking off a new number one. Yay.
Kicking. Yeah.
Thor, God of Thunder, numero uno, with Jason Aaron doing the writing duties and Assad Ribic doing the artwork. God damn, I've missed Assad Ribic ever since Uncanny X-Force. It's brilliant.
Ultimates?
Ultimates? Nah, I kind of jumped out of Ultimates.
He did Ultimates, I mean.
Well, yeah, I mean, but...
It's not the same. I know what you mean.
It's not the same. No. No, I mean, I've missed him in the mainstream, I guess. But, whatever. That's not here nor there. Anyway, Todd Rubick is back, Jason Aaron doing the writing duties, and it is brilliant. We basically start off in 893 AD, somewhere in Iceland, where a frost giant has been torturing the local populace of a small village. They prayed to Thor, Thor came down, beat the shit out of the giant, put his head on a pike, and he's been partying, drinking, and boning ever since.
Nice! And,
yeah, man! And about 4 days in... this guy washes up on the shore, and Thor instantly recognizes him as he was a god. So, immediately, we have a dead god on our hands. Moving on from there, because we're not really given much explanation as to what happens there, except that, you know, Thor has never really seen a god die before. Remember, this is early in his career before any of the Avengers and shit. So, you know, this is the
first time he's seen something like this. What happens next is we cut to the present day, and Thor is responding to a prayer in space on the planet Indigar. Yes, that's right. Thor is now worshipped by aliens, too. They pray for rain, and Thor comes, and he makes it rain on them. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Thor, I know, you get a kick out of that taser. I know. There is one panel, though, that kind of I thought was really, really cool. In this whole sequence near the beginning, this young woman who was praying for rain from Thor, it's like, you came, I never dreamed you actually would. And Thor responds, I heard your prayer, little one. And what kind of a guy would I be if I did not answer prayers? Balls in your court, Christians, Jews,
hey!
Muslims.
Hey!
I'm not here to get political or religious. Anyway, moving on from there, once ale is mentioned, Thor decides to stick around with the people and just kind of chill out for a minute. Because, hey, he brought them rain and they're throwing him a party. So, yeah. Unfortunately, there's no boning, but they eventually get to the topic of Thor's, you know, asking the brilliant question, so why didn't you guys pray to your own god? And we come to the point in the story where the elder is like, well, you know, you don't have gods. And Thor is kind of taken aback by this. He's like, everyone has a pantheon of gods. He's like, but the elder then says that, you know, they've been reduced to just childhood stories and they're not here anymore. So given the supposed location of these gods in their temple, Thor sets out to try and track them down. He comes across this giant floating castle in the sky, and he quickly discovers that every single god in the place has been strung about on the wall with hooks through their chest, decapitated, tortured slowly, painfully. And Thor realizes that this murder, this mass murder of the pantheon of gods from Indigar and the god from his days in Iceland are one and the same, committed by the same person, essentially.
Nice.
Now, we're not given much, we're not given really any backstory as to who it is, but there is a name thrown about. And the name is Gore the God Butcher. And apparently this guy has something of a reputation amongst the gods for being a badass motherfucker. And while investigating the pantheon, Thor comes across one of his quote-unquote guard dogs, I guess is what you would call it. And it's this giant black reptilian thing. It's bigger than Thor. It's fast. It's strong. But Thor manages to, you know, smack it without too much trouble with his hammer. Just got to put it down. But Thor now realizes that this guy is on the loose and he is out for blood. But it's interesting to point out that these gods apparently have been dead for centuries. So what the hell Gore has been doing between then and, you know, right now is actually just a question to be answered later. Now, that segment ends with Thor realizing that he needs to get on top of this and he needs to find out what this guy is up to and where he is. Because if he doesn't, more gods are surely going to die. And then, we close out with one last scene. Many, many millennia from now, in the Great Hall of Asgard, a man sits on his throne alone. The halls are empty, and we realize quickly that this man is the sole remaining inhabitant and the king of Asgard, Thor. And he has grown to look exactly like his father. I actually thought it was Odin at first glance. He has the white hair, the flowing beard, even the eye patch, but this is Thor. And he realizes these people are pounding at the door, ready to get at him. They're mocking him because they've killed everybody in Asgard. And he realizes he has to go out like a motherfucking god. So he grabs his Odin sword, calls Mjolnir to him, charges out the gate, and takes on an entire army worth of this quote-unquote guard dog.
Hooah!
Lightning cracks, thunder booms, and he goes out swinging. And that is where the first issue of Thor, God of Thunder ends. Next issue, hopefully, will lend more idea to who this Gore the God Butcher is. Though they do release a preview of the number 2 cover image for the next issue. And I must say that Gore actually kind of looks a little bit like Thanos. This is kind of odd. I mean, he's got the purple skin going, the glowy eyes. I mean, he doesn't have the whole, you know, theatricality of his costume or whatever, but he looks almost a little bit like Thanos. Coincidence? Perhaps. Guess we'll just have to wait and see for the next issue. J. Jason Aaron and Asad Ribic are a wonder team. This issue was fantastic. I never really been the hugest fan of Thor. I always thought he was a little hokey with his, you know, Shakespearean talk and, you know, some of his other things.
A guy who likes a dude with multiple personality disorders, that's saying something.
Well, Deadpool's not hokey.
Let's talk about Moon Knight, but whatever.
Hold up. Deadpool's not hokey?
Whoa. Okay, it's about to get dirty up in here. Hold on.
Deadpool is hokey. That's just it. It's funny for him to say shit like that.
Anyway, you let me finish. Thor, God of Thunder number one, it's a very, very good issue. Very intriguing. It doesn't keep you in one place for too long so much that you get bored. It doesn't keep shuffling you around so much that it confuses you. It's good quality, solid writing from Jason Aaron, of course, with some, you know, bloodthirsty goodness thrown in for good measure, some epic moments, and of course, the wonderful, wonderful artwork of Asad Ribic. I actually gave this issue a 4 out of 5. It was a great read. I recommend it to anyone who is a fan of Thor and anyone looking to jump on board any of the Marvel Now number ones. I recommend the issue, and that's my final ruling on that.
See,
I have a question.
I'm kicking myself real quick before you go to this. I'm kicking myself because I was going to buy this and I said I was going to trade weight, but I've heard too many damn good things for me to want to pick this up.
Dude, go back and grab it on the shelf. Really, it was good. It was really, really good.
Yeah, so I've heard.
Oh, and one more thing, I guess, before I answer your question, Taser. Shout out to Dean White as well, the color artist for this. He did a really good job with all the colors and playing off the shadows and stuff. He did a really, really good job. So credit to him as well. And that's it. Taser?
If they have no other, all their gods were gone or whatever, they were reduced to, you know, stories and what have you. How far away is Logramar or whatever?
You mean the world from like Earth or something?
Yes. How far are we talking? Galaxy, solar system away? What?
It's never specified. They keep it very, very vague. The
okay, so it's a long distance away.
The location just says deep space, and
okay.
Thor's little monologue says that, you know, he hears it from across the cosmos. So it's not specified exactly how far away it is, but let's believe it's pretty damn far.
All right, so did he just hear a prayer, or was it a prayer directed towards him?
It was a prayer directed towards him. The aliens, I guess, decided to pray to other gods, though it's not explained how they knew about Thor or why they prayed to him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, because I'm like,
prayed for a rain, and then Thor just happened to be the god to intercept that.
Well, no, yeah, it says the prayer is pretty much, "Dear Thor, my people need your help." So it's kind of alluded to, I guess, in one part of her little speech where she says, "Everyone throughout the spaceway says you're the greatest god who's ever lived and that you can do anything." And that's pretty much what they leave it as, is how they know Thor. They pretty much just heard him from stories and crap, so. It's not
really.
None of this is explicitly stated how they know about Thor or why they decided to pray to him, but for whatever reason they did, and all of a sudden Thor just showed up. Like,
See?
I know. Your explanation bound. You want an explanation as to how all this shit is happening, but
it's like, we heard you were the greatest, you know, greatest whoever in the universe. I've only had 2 issues. But still, we heard you were the greatest so-and-so throughout the universe.
2 issues? Oh my god. Yeah, but the thing is, Taser, if you like Thor, you can look past it. Because honestly, the way the Avengers end up around, I mean, how could you not believe someone's heard about Thor?
Especially considering where he's traveled, somebody's bound to have heard of him.
I could let it go simply for how you know, Brian Bright said the book ended, you know, with that whole, you know, King Conan.
I dare say he goes out Scourge,
you know,
style.
Exactly. You know, that kind
doesn't
of
doesn't he have the destroyer?
Book,
doesn't he? Isn't one of his arms missing and the destroyer is one of his arms?
I don't believe so. Oh, actually, yes. Yes, it is. One of his arms is the destroyer armor.
Well, that just means one of his arms is in destroyer armor. That doesn't mean that's his arm.
That could be it. But like I said, we're not given really much. You know, Jason Aaron leaves it up to be very mysterious about how he plans this out. So, you know.
Ah, so it's like, I don't want to have to answer a whole lot of questions. I'm just doing
He's keeping his cards close to the vest.
Well, that's cool. I just that one little thing was bothering me, but, you know, if the book works...
I realize why it would. I'll, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Last but not least, because I haven't gone... Arnold, are you still with us, bro?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right. All right, we've been pretty positive, but come on, let's bring on the shit fest with New Avengers 33.
Good. To be completely honest, it was so kind of blah that while you guys were chatting away, I was kind of rereading it so I could actually remember what happened. previously in this issue, this is New Avengers, 33, part of the End Times deal that's going on with the Avengers and New Avengers storylines. Last issue, we saw that Daniel Drum, or Dr. Voodoo as he is known, had took over the body of Victoria Hand and used it to attack people like Damien Hellstrom and Jennifer Kale. Essentially also murdered Victoria Hand and framed Dr. Strange for it. Dr. Strange runs off to Damien Hellstrom's house in New Orleans and finds him already murdered. Right when that happens, Maria Hill of S.H.I.E.L.D. happens to walk in and see him there over a dead murdered body of Daniel Hellstrom, and, you know, the miscommunication ensues. And we cut back to Avengers Tower. Captain Marvel, formerly Miss Marvel, is assisting Luke and Jessica and the baby to leave Avengers Mansion, or New Avengers Mansion, because that's where they were planning to do before all this crazy shit went down and people started murdering other people on the front lawn. So Maria and Stephen Strange are going back and forth. He's trying to explain that, you know, people are being possessed and he shouldn't be anywhere near him, and this Drum is possessing other people just so he can get at Doctor Strange and try and kill him. Continuing conversation goes from there. Things get a little heated and out of hand, and attacks start happening. You come to find out, or Maria Hill gets killed. They think it's the rest of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents think it's Doctor Strange. Come to find out that it was actually a life model decoy of Maria Hill that she sent just so she could get another view of things and see what was actually going down. So when she saw shit go down there, with Drum being there and all of the possession kind of taking place, she now knew that all of that was going on their end where she was still actually at New Avengers Mansion, rather. So now she finally realizes and starts spreading the word about, or trying to spread the word about the fact that Drum is possessing people and the Avengers are on their way, and Doctor Strange is trying to tell him, no, he can possess any of the Avengers now, and right, of course, as that said, all of the fucking Avengers show up, you know, all the heavy hitters, Cap, Iron Man, Thor, Red Hulk, Vision, everybody just comes into the mix. More and more fighting ensues. I'm actually trying to scroll to the end to see what's going down, because I forgot. Right at the very last minute, as things are getting heated, Strange shows up and is ready to fight Daniel Drum to the death, and that's where the issue ends. Just again, being the tail end of the New Avengers series that's gone on, it's falling flat. I'm kind of reading it for the sake of reading it almost. It has some of its highlights and its good moments, I guess. I'm a little hard pressed to find them or even bring up some of them right now. To the art is not bad. It's just not what I want. It doesn't feel right for New Avengers. It's good art. I like it. And in another book or some other books, it might work really well. It just didn't seem to fit right for this, and it was such a drastic change from the art that it was in an issue that was still part of this storyline. So the jarring factor is also an issue, but I like it, just not for New Avengers. So all in all, I'll give this a 2 out of 5. Oh, by the way, I love the cover shows. I know, never believe comic book covers. The cover shows Luke Cage standing over a dead Jessica Drew. Nothing even like that comes close to happening.
Nope.
You know, I wanted to say this about that book. I'm hoping that we really haven't seen the last of Hellstrom and Jennifer Kale, because Hellstrom appeared in another book not too long ago, and I'm like, yeah. But
yeah, how do you think I feel as a Magic Carrot fan?
Yeah, you know. Damn it. And also, who wrote this story again?
Bendis.
Was that Bendis? Okay. Yeah. I realized that I think Bendis was the one that actually created Victoria Hand, you know? Right.
Fuck you, Bendis. I liked her. She was the hottest lesbian in comics. Damn it, damn it, damn it. I liked looking at her. You know, she was an interesting character that he underused. Okay, aside from that first storyline post, post Osborn's fall, he didn't really, you know, she did jack shit except for run messages. Big fucking deal. You know, and I think that, you know, that would be why she's dead now, because, well, I had no use for her. She serves no purpose. Let me get rid of her. But I liked her. I like looking at her. Damn it, damn it,
oh,
damn it, damn
boo
it.
Boo fuckity who. You lose, Victorian. I lost both fucking the voodoo, Doc Voodoo, and his brother, and now he's a villain. Okay?
Well,
not
you
cool.
You can love black men all you want. I love lesbians.
I do. I love me some black men. So don't get it twisted.
Don't get it twisted. Two snaps up. Anyway.
I love Jericho Drum. God damn it. I love Daniel Stewart. You turned him into a villain.
I just thought, you know, it was kind of an off end, you know. She kind of got back killed, backhanded, and you know, oh, she's dead. Like really, you know? Okay. So I'm going to miss her. That's really it. I'm just going to miss her because I like Victoria Hand, if only just for the eye candy.
Yeah, she was nice to look at. All right. Last but not least, Wolverine and the X-Men number 20, continuing the best mutant book at Marvel. This is
Uncanny X-Force.
That's
yeah,
ending.
See, now I've torn you, haven't I?
That's ending soon, so soon yeah. This would be the... I'm sad
ongoing,
about it, too.
I guess.
So, anyways, this is basically one-and-done issue in which we learn a little bit more about Angel, not Warren Worthington Angel, as he goes to Brazil to find this new mutant who she has the ability to turn into, as Angel calls her, a were-shark. And... And she actually, I'm going to call it fin smacks Brazilian dudes who are hunting sharks, and they're cutting off their fins and selling them for soup, I guess. I didn't know that was a
shark
thing.
Shark fin soup. It's a big trade over in Japan and stuff.
I did not know this. So
yeah. Steve Irwin was actually a big proponent against that. He
I
hated it.
I figured he would be. Anyways.
But if they're eating them, what's the big deal?
Well, they're cutting off their
fins.
They have
to kill
sharks to
get the
back
fins,
in the ocean.
Dude.
Yeah, for food. I have to eat.
These are sharks, goddammit. We can't just eat sharks. Next thing you know, we'll be eating cows and chickens. It's mad.
Anyways, so like a new age hippie, Angel basically talks to her to come join the be part of the Jean Grey of higher learning. So
yeah, cookies.
So fuck. So, we also learn a little bit that the at the end of Uncanny X-Force, we know that Warren came back to life due to the life seed, and that because of that, it seems it's slowly draining his life force out. As he uses his powers more, it's slowly draining him of everything, and eventually, if he keeps this up, he's going to die, a la Spawn from the early 90s. Which is the first thing I thought of. You know, it's not entirely thing like the clock, but it's similar in sort of use your powers, you're gonna die. But Warren's like, I have too much good to do in this world. I can't. I have to continue. And so, meanwhile, while he's down in Brazil, he runs into Mystique, plus the new Silver Samurai, and you know, some great inner dialogue, and probably my favorite sort of banter between two characters of the week was there's a point where the Iara, I believe is her name, she bites the head off Mystique while in shark form, and the new Silver Samurai says, "Wow, I'd never been turned on by a shark before, but wow." And then he turns to Warren, he goes, "Tell me the truth, this is turning you on too, isn't it?" And Warren, out of nowhere, creates like this energy sword, like just does it, like he's like, "Oh, he just did it." And
he can do that.
And so he says, "Hold this, I'll be right back." And of course, like a comedy routine, he doesn't even grab it; it just stands near him, and it like electrocutes him, which I thought was freaking hysterical. And he Angel escapes with Iara to back to the Jean Grey school, and she basically says, "I'm not gonna stay here because it's too far inland." Of course, she's a shark, so that's not good for her, and that Warren has agreed to fly her to Brazil on weekends. Meanwhile, we found another mutant called Mudbug, who, you know, who, like, apparently they know about Wolverine school. Yes. I reckon Wolverine used to be all right back when he was always stabbing folks in their faces all the time. Now he's gone all sissified, ain't he?
He's a little pussy, Mom.
I heard he don't even use his claws no more, except on folks that actually done something wrong. What kind of tree-hugging liberal crap is that? That line made me laugh. So it seems that the leader of the Hellfire Club, whose name escapes me right now, Daniel Kilgore, has formed a, not Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, but has Sauron is part of this team.
I think it's Cade Kilgore.
Cade Kilgore? I thought it was Daniel.
Was it Daniel?
It's probably Cade.
Danny! It's Danny Kilgore.
So, okay, yeah,
so
Danny,
we have mysterious black man who looks like a bigger, older version of Cloak. We have a Yeti.
Unidentified black male.
We have a Yeti. We have a Dark Angel, it looks like it. Sauron, the pterodactyl mutant hybrid thing. I recognize this dude in the suit and mask because he appeared in Jason Aaron's Wolverine run for like one issue, and he was like a very good, he was like a sniper person, but he wasn't really explored. So, and of course we got a female Mojo, like with the wheelchair, with the, except not fat and grotesque. So yeah, as a filler issue, this was great. I liked it, you know, versus the two new mutants we met in All New X-Men. I really like the introduction of this new mutant, of the Were-Shark, because I think that's just such a great mutation idea.
She-Sharks!
And I love the fact that, you know, if you've been reading Uncanny X-Force, now we, you know, the continuation of Angel's story, and the fact that maybe eventually he might leave or something's going to happen to him if he keeps this up, which, you know, I like, and I sort of... In a weird, funny kind of way, I enjoy how he preaches about the Jean Grey school in sort of a convent kind of way. In fact, he even says, like, although being convent wouldn't be a bad idea, which I thought was hysterical. So, I mean, this book continues to be excellent. It's probably going to win Book of the Year for me. I don't know yet, but 4 out of 5 for me for this issue. And the next issue comes out this Wednesday, so yay for more. And if... I mean, that's it, right? Pretty much.
The issue was so good it left Iggy tongue-tied, folks. That is how badly he has it.
It was good. It was really good. You know, this is how you do a done-in-one quote-unquote filler issue. You know, sure the main story didn't progress, but you know, you got a little bit of a character perspective on Angel, this new Angel who's not Warren, and you know, sort of his new what his life is like now, and a new mutant at that fact.
Question.
So, yeah. Yes.
What did they finally shut off Brew's life support?
No, I think he's still there.
He's still alive.
Yeah, he's still there, although his condition is not improving.
Okay.
Comment on this. Taser, did you read this book?
I read the two before it because more be curiosity and seeing some talk on 4chan, I was like, oh my god, I can't believe they actually did that. So I downloaded and went, holy shit, he got shot in the head.
Yeah.
Then I had to see the follow-up because I wanted to see how ineffective a hunter Wolverine would turn out to be, and sure enough, he was. So, yeah, then I was done.
Issue made me think of you because there's a line said by Mudbug. I know you remember, Ben, you mentioned that whole scene. There's a part in Mudbug that is you to a T about Wolverine. And I think they probably put it in there on purpose for people who are saying the same thing as you.
Yeah. That Wolverine doesn't.
He's like, yeah, Wolverine used to be all right back when he was always stabbing folks in their faces all the time, but now he's gone all sissified, ain't he? I heard he don't even use his claws no more, except on folks that actually done something wrong. What kind of tree-hugging liberal crap is that?
Yeah.
I'm like, that's Taser. I said somebody put Taser in a comic book.
And you know what? To go along with that, I was having a conversation with my roommate the other day, and aside from, yeah, he's not reading anything with Wolverine anymore because he's become that disenchanted with the character. He's not reading anything X-Men or anything Avengers-oriented that's got Wolverine in the book, you know?
A lot of books.
You know, when I see him in the morning, sometimes I'm like, hey, what's up? He's like, fuck Wolverine. I swear to God. That's it. I just had to share that. My friend dropped the books because Wolverine has become.
Yeah, he's Xavier's, not.
No. Hear me out. Wolverine has become Xavier's dream. He's become the big prophet for that. Let me rephrase that. He's become the big prophet for Xavier's dream when that used to be Cyclops. Now
yeah,
they've
I mean,
actually
Brian said
switched
this last
roles.
Week. They've become the new Magneto, the new Xavier. Yeah.
But exactly. Remember that letter that he left for Logan at the end of Consequences?
Yeah, he basically
you know,
said,
you're the
I've
better
the man.
Now I don't have to be.
Exactly.
You know, so they switched roles somewhat.
Yeah.
And I understand it. Well, I don't have a problem with that story wise, but the way Marvel's gone about it and done it, I can completely see why somebody would drop. You know,
if you've read Wolverine for when he was like the badass he was in the 90s, sure.
Well, remember, my roommate is only a few years younger than me, so yeah, he could say that.
Or like, I mean, or Wolverine during the Claremont era, where he really didn't take shit from anybody, you know?
Yeah, see, but
to me, I see it as somewhat, you know, eventually he was going to get tired of it being around the people he was. That's just me.
Okay.
That eventually, but that sort of you know, he still kills people. He's not as bloodthirsty as he used to be, but his sort of instincts have directed towards another purpose.
I would accept that if it wasn't for the fact that you have him. See, he plays in two big dichotomies. You have Wolverine and X-Force. Okay.
Also, that's pretty much disbanding when this story arc's over, and he's not going to be in charge of that anymore.
But even still, you have Wolverine and X-Force, who's still doing Hit Squad, you know, for things that need to be eliminated because they're a problem for whatever reason. They get taken out, and he's been a part of that. And then you've got kindler, gentler Wolverine over there in Wolverine and the X-Men, where he's headmaster, you know? When issue one, and I got to go back to this, he has the fucking kid in his hands. And, oh no, I left the toast on. I have to go address that. And he lets the kid go, knowing what the kid was responsible for. Okay? I mean, come on. When was the last time you can recall Wolverine having somebody who's as fucked up as this kid is in his hands, and he lets him go because, oh shit, something just blew up in the school. I have to go address it. You know, I mean, that was like a huge what the fuck moment for me. And that's one of the reasons why I can't read that book. Because that's kindler, gentler Wolverine, and Marvel's trying to have their cake and eat it too by playing them both. Now, granted, they're going to get rid of, you know, Wolverine in X-Force, and they'll probably stick with kindler, gentler Wolverine. But still, for a long time, you just see, well, if you've got this guy, and this guy's the exact same guy, then we should start seeing, you know, some of the same decisions being made here. When he went after them because of Brew, that was the first time I'd actually seen something like old school Wolverine. You know?
He's probably,
and
of course, I mean, he's probably kicking himself because of what he, you know, if he would have just maybe not killed Kilgore, but captured him or something, then maybe this wouldn't have happened to Brew.
Yeah, I mean, even if he didn't stab the kid in his fucking chest, which would have been easy to do considering how he had him by his shirt, I couldn't believe that he just dropped him and ran back to the school. That was like, what? That's like those whatchamacallit TV shows where the villain's getting away, but we can watch them as we stand here 2 feet away, watch them get away. But we've got people who fly as we watch them fly away. You know, I mean, that's bad writing. That's horrible writing. And that's stupid. Go ahead.
The way you say you want to kill the main villain, Kilgore's been the main antagonist for this book, you know.
Even if they don't even if he didn't kill Kilgore,
What happened? Okay, what
if
he does kill him?
No, just hear me out here.
even if he didn't kill him right then and there, he could have taken this kid in and held them captive, and then you would have had this story where the rest of Kilgore's crew came in and busts him out. I could have accepted that. But that was just... what? You know, that made no sense whatsoever. That was insulting. You know? I wouldn't have believed that if this was old school DC. You know what I'm saying? And this was Green Lantern, hokey Green Lantern with their freaking punching bag, you know, ring effects and shit like that. That was mind-boggling to me. So, but, you know, this is also an old argument. You guys have heard me going about this. It just blew my mind that this, we're looking at two different things here. And going back to what I was talking about, Wolverine is now the big prophet for Xavier's legacy. I'm kind of flabbergasted and dumbfounded, but yeah, this is the new reality.
Maybe
this is Marvel
Xavier's
now.
Method to work with him, you know, after years of trying to help him from becoming a monster. You know, I mean, that first image of we're told, you know, him running out into the Canadian wilderness, feral, and just, you know, that loner type personality, and this Xavier, and not just him, but everybody else around him, breaking away that man that he was.
I mean, that's
the way I see it. And to me,
I dig that. I dig that. And
it's just him not killing Kilgore, capturing him is what bothers
me. But see, that's what I'm saying, you know. And even now, hey, I'm old school. You know, I don't mind putting a blade in somebody's heart if they deserve it. But even new school, you know, X-Men movie Wolverine would have dragged the kid back with him. You know, just letting him go like that was just like, what the fuck, hey? And, you know, sure enough, to just kind of put a nice big stamp on it, Wolverine is now the better man. You know, let that sink into your head, folks. Wolverine is now the better man. Of course, Wolverine's also the big character making the most amount of money for, you know, Marvel in regards to paraphernalia nowadays. But anyway, Wolverine is now the better man. Welcome to Marvel Now.
All right, well, with that unexpected discussion on Wolverine's character growth, thank you for listening. Be sure to check out me and Brian's other appearances. We discuss video games, including Assassin's Creed 3, and our favorite video game sequels in the latest episode of the Real Players Gaming Podcast Show, a.k.a. The RPG Show. Yes.
And tune in for the next show where I discuss Halo 4.
Yes, Mr. Microsoft discuss Halo 4. Or Mr. Xbox, or whatever nickname I gave you last time.
Mr. Xbox 360.
Yes. And, of course, twitter.com/sportstudiopcast. Always visit thegreenlanterncore.com and make fun of Agent Purple by calling him a wet blanket. And we will see. I hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving. If you're not in the U.S., have a happy Thursday anyways.
Gobble, gobble.
And, you know, take it easy. Be safe on the road if you're traveling, you know. Don't act suspicious.
Don't murder people or get murdered at Black Friday sales.
Don't act like a mutant, whatever that means. And
Back my Hostess Twinkies. I want my Hostess Twinkies, damn it.
Have a good Thanksgiving, guys. Take it easy.